Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Glad you've joined us this morning. Jeff Wolf behind the console, as usual. Jane Houghton in our producer this morning. And the wheels continue to come off at the White House and throughout the administration. Some of the stuff going on this week, it's amazing. I mean, it was bad last week, and it's gotten worse and worse and worse. So where do we begin? Well, why don't we begin where it hits all of us the most and the worst, and that's the economy and inflation. You may have heard that the Q1 GDP was a minus 1.4%. That's worse than expected. It was not expected to be negative. Of course, the White House tried to spin their way out of that one. But let's turn to inflation. The consumer price index up 8.5% year over year. The personal consumption expenditure, that's another one of the figures they look at, that's up 6.5%. I don't know how you're doing out there, but if you saw the stock market yesterday, it went down 939 points on Friday. No big rush to open our next 401k statement now, is there? But doesn't seem to bother the president.
Sir, how concerned are you about a recession, given the GDP report today showed a contraction of 1.4% in the fourth quarter?
Well, I'm not concerned about a recession. And I mean, you're always concerned about a recession.
Okay, a little confused there. As went on a little more about it.
I'm not concerned about a recession. I think what you're seeing is enormous growth in the country that was affected by everything from COVID and the COVID blockages that we occurred along the way.
The economy is growing. The Q1 gross domestic product was down 1.4% with a negative 1.4%. But the president says the economy is growing. Well, gee, does that lead us into the misinformation discussion? The headline in the Washington Post, the uproar over Homeland Security's Disinformation Governance Board. Now, did you hear about this? This went front and center right after Elon Musk worked out the Twitter deal so he can get back to some free speech on Twitter. And if you try and find Republicans on Twitter, you can't find them. Most have been kicked off. Maybe there'll be some freedom of speech back. But in response to Elon Musk's move on Twitter, the Department of Homeland Security's creation of a disinformation governance board has set off a backlash. All right, now this is from the Washington Post. Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas mentioned the creation of the board in multiple congressional hearings this week. In one, he linked it to efforts to combat misinformation from human smugglers. What? In another, he said it would be used to counter Russian cyber and election misinformation. Quote, we have just established a mis- and disinformation governance board at DHS to move and more effectively combat this threat, not only to election security, but to our own homeland security. Seems like the Russian disinformation was coming from the Clinton campaign. Anyway, that's not in the Washington Post article. Wow. So then they come up with the czar. The executive director is Nina Jankowicz. Now, in the past, Ms. Jankowicz has supported Democrats, praised efforts to crack down on coronavirus misinformation on social media, and expressed skepticism about the provenance of Hunter Biden's laptop. Josh Hawley had an interesting comment. He said, rather than police our border, Homeland Security has decided to make policing American speech its top priority. Those are the words of Josh Hawley, of course, the senator. Now, let's going to take you back a little bit here. We have a clip here from May of 2020. This is Cut I And this is our new executive director of the Board of Disinformation back in May of 2020, talking about Donald Trump and how it would be terrible if the government got into this type of work.
With President Trump right now calling all of these news organizations that have inconvenient for him stories that they're getting out there, that he's calling fake news and now lashing out at platforms, I would never want to see our executive branch have that sort of power.
Our executive branch shouldn't have that sort of power. She's going to run the whole thing. She's now got the power. The hypocrisy of these people, it's just amazing. This didn't sit too well with Representative Jim Jordan. Of course, Secretary Mayorkas, the Secretary of Homeland Security, not so sure how he gets that title, but anyway, he's concerned about this, and he asked Secretary Mayorkas about his new division.
I was just wondering, when the head of the CDC, Ms. Walensky, said that the vaccinated can't get the virus, did that undermine trust in government? When the highest paid official in our government, Dr. Fauci, when he said the virus didn't come from a lab, did that undermine trust in government? How about this one? How about when 51 former Intel officials told us that the Hunter Biden story had all the earmarks of Russian misinformation? Will that be something that this governance board that you just formed, will you be looking into that?
Jim Jordan strolled over to the Fox studios and had this to say later on.
So the person in charge of the Disinformation Governance Board is the same individual who told us the dossier was real and the Hunter laptop story was false. That's the person in charge. That is frightening.
So we have heard for the whole tenure of the Biden administration and Secretary Mayorkas that things are under control at the border and it's being effectively managed. And he continued that narrative this week in testimony in both the Senate and the House. Jim Jordan, sorry to give all the credit to Jim Jordan this morning, but he was quite vocal this week and was really bringing it home. Here's what Representative Jordan had to ask Secretary Mayorkas about the terrorists coming into the United States across the southern border.
Have any of the 42 illegal migrants on the terrorist watch list or no-fly list encountered on our southwest border been released into the United States?
Ranking Member Jordan, as I mentioned before, I will provide that data to you with respect to the disposition of each one. I do not know the answer to your question.
The Secretary of Homeland Security does not know the answer to the status of 42 individuals who came to our southern border illegally, are on the no-fly list and then terrorist watch list. You do not know whether they have been released or not into the country. That's your testimony.
Ranking Member Jordan, as I've said before, I will provide you the data.
He's the Secretary of Homeland Security. What does he do all day? Let's turn to the southern border from another perspective. This is Yolanda Ramon. She is a Democratic mayor of Eagle Pass, Texas, and she begs to differ with the whole notion the administration is trying to put out there that the border is being effectively managed and we're secure.
It's just that we don't feel safe. I respect President Biden very much, but as far as being managed the way it should be, I can tell you, he's welcome to come over here. He's welcome to visit. And I can tell you that this, it's not effective management. I don't care what anybody says.
This is not effective management. I don't care what anybody says. And she's a Democratic mayor in Texas. So Jackie Heinrich, the Fox News White House correspondent, brought this up to Jen Psaki. Here's that exchange.
The mayor of Eagle Pass told my colleague down at the border today, and the mayor is a Democrat, by the way, that the border is not being effectively managed and asked the president to come and see it. Does the president have any plans to go to the border?
I don't have any plans to preview at this point in time. Certainly we're open to it, but no plans to preview.
Is it something he would consider doing before the Summit of the Americas, where he's set to meet with the leaders of Central and South America, see the situation firsthand before having that robust conversation?
Well, he's meeting with leaders of countries that he's traveled to many times and certainly is very familiar with the issues that will be discussed, which is addressing root causes, coordinating, whether it's on the economic front or security front. And that's an initiative he led during the when he was vice president. So he's very familiar with those issues.
Yeah, and how successful has that initiative been? Root causes? All we've heard about now for about a year and a half is root causes. So how many billions of dollars are we going to pump into Central America to get at the root causes? What is the effect that it's having at the border? They just keep coming across the border. Root causes? Well, how does Newt Gingrich feel about all this and Secretary Mayorkas?
Mayorkas is a combination of incompetent and implementing the policies of Joe Biden. I mean, Biden has decided that he wants an open border, but he can't say it, that he's willing to accept anybody, whether they're diseased, whether they're carrying fentanyl, whether they have a criminal record. They're just not paying any attention. And the Border Patrol is now so drowning in the sheer number of people, they can't compete with the cartels. So what you've seen is the cartels gradually taking control of the American southern border. The flood of fentanyl alone, and I was just in Cobb County, Georgia, where six people had died in the previous 2 weeks from fentanyl. And this is madness. I mean, at a minimum, Kevin McCarthy's right. Mayorkas ought to be impeached. But I think also the whole department has to be overhauled. And the idea that they're now going to appoint some left-wing zealot to become the censorship czar for the United States, clearly unconstitutional, clearly a violation of the First Amendment, and maybe a tribute to Joe Biden's friends in the Chinese Communist Party or Moscow, but certainly very un-American. And I think this just tells you how out of control they are.
And that's Newt Gingrich. He was speaking on the Fox News channel, and he mentioned fentanyl. And you may be seeing now public service announcements from the state of Maryland about fentanyl and about the dangers and about the overdoses. And, oh, by the way, fentanyl contributed to 80% of overdose deaths in Maryland in 2020. So there is a fentanyl problem, even if Secretary Mayorkas and President Biden and Jen Psaki and the rest of them don't want to acknowledge there's a problem at the border. Fentanyl continues to pour into this country. It is 6:21. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Michelle Murray is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
So far, traffic is moving at speed along the Capitol Beltway throughout Maryland and Virginia, though there is a work zone on the outer loop in the vicinity of Bradley Boulevard before River Road, and that is taking up the right lane, so far not causing any delays. Also in Tysons, there is road work on westbound 7 between the Dulles Toll Road and the Georgetown Pike. The roadway does narrow through that area. And also in Alexandria, Westley Road is closed westbound between Valley Drive and Southley Road for major bridge repairs taking place. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly to mostly sunny on this Saturday. Temperature is going to warm up a bit, back in the upper 60s today. Some light winds as well. So overall, a great start to the weekend. Don't forget your sunglasses out the door. Later on tonight, partly cloudy, lows back in the 40s to near 50 degrees. We'll have clouds on the increase into your Sunday. A warm frontal boundary will slide in from the south and west, bringing the chance for some showers. I think the highest likelihood for rain will be during the afternoon and evening. High temperatures on your Sunday into the upper 60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
44 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:22 on the Saturday Morning Update.
Hey, it's Chris Plant. Join me and other listeners for our August 22 Alaskan Sea Cruise. Get all the details at chrisplantcruise.com. That's chrisplantcruise.com.
The Saturday Morning Update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. The misinformation, the confusion, the walking back continues from this administration. Now, here's Dr. Fauci, his proclamation about COVID-19 this week.
We are certainly right now in this country out of the pandemic phase.
Okay, we're out of the pandemic phase, but he's chosen not to go to the White House Correspondents' Dinner. He had to walk back that statement, by the way, the next day. The White House Communications Director, Kate Bedingfield, has now tested positive for COVID-19. The White House Correspondents' Association dinner is tonight. You may have heard also this week that Vice President Harris had contracted COVID-19. Now, throughout the press reports about Vice President Harris, asymptomatic, didn't feel anything, working, doing just fine. However, it was announced that after the test for COVID-19, that there was no cause for concern from her press secretary. She wasn't feeling any symptoms, had been staying away from other members of the administration, hadn't been in close contact with the First Lady or the President. So that was the spin. But headlines floating around out there, medical personnel are baffled by Kamala Harris's use of a certain pill. After she took the medication, some professionals were concerned. Medical experts confused about the treatment she received. She had taken the Pfizer pill Paxlovid. It's an antiviral pill usually used on patients who are experiencing intense symptoms from the virus. The former Surgeon General, Jerome Adams, sent out a tweet. He questioned the use of the pill, writing, quote, "Asymptomatic COVID and no medical issues is not an indication for Paxlovid." So maybe a little misinformation coming out of the vice president's office about that. We saw the gridiron dinner. That was a super spreader. The White House Correspondents' Dinner is tonight. That's a big one. And here's even what Joy Behar had to say about it on The View.
Dr. Fauci also said he's not attending the White House Correspondents' Dinner this weekend after making an individual assessment of his personal risk. But President Biden is still going. Do you think that he should maybe stay home?
Look, isn't that what people wanted?
That whole dinner is a super spreader. I've been there many times. Yeah. There's a lot of people. They all sit on top of each other.
And I've been there, too. I'm actually going to go on Saturday. But listen, it is...
You will be wearing a mask.
I'm going to be wearing a mask, but not the entire time, right? Because we're eating. We're going to be drinking.
6:25, the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Coming up on the program today, we'll talk with KT McFarland about the administration, the foreign policy issues. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer will join us. Of course, it is day 66 of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And as of this morning, the Ukrainian government says they're holding off the Russians on three fronts at this time. The UN Secretary General was in Kyiv late in the week, and same time he was there, Russian bombs came in just after he made his tour of the city. So no let up from Russia there, and basically a stick in the eye to the UN from Vladimir Putin. We'll talk with Cheryl Atkinson this morning, an interesting update on the solar mandates, and she'll take a look at summer travel, as some airlines are now, of course, getting back to normal. People are traveling again, so we'll talk about that with Cheryl Atkinson this morning. Poll numbers dreadful for President Biden. Jennifer Harper's got that for us. That's coming up. And you may have heard that one of the criminal cases in New York against Donald Trump now falling apart. Apparently there will be no indictment from the criminal side on some of his financial investigations, and we'll get into that with Jim Trusty this morning. Also the latest on Michael Sussman, the D.C. attorney that's been tangled up in the Durham probe. We'll get the very latest. He was in court this week. We'll get Jim's read on that. John Gizzi joins us this morning, and he will give us a preview from his perspective of the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and also we'll take a look at some of the developments in the administration and some crazy primary activity going on in Ohio. It's a real, real fireworks show in Ohio. And we'll get into Vladimir Putin's mental state. So we've got a lot to cover right here on the Saturday Morning Update. Stay with us.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
In other news at 6:30, proposals to ban stock trading by lawmakers are gaining ground in Congress and on the campaign trail. 62 House members have now endorsed a bill from Democratic Representative Abigail Spanberger that would ban such activity. A similar bill in the Senate has 9 supporters. Lawmakers looking to tighten the rules around trading since several members faced heavy scrutiny for their stock sales during the pandemic. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has warned yet again that the North could preemptively use its nuclear weapons if North Korea is threatened. He praised his top military officials over the staging of a massive military parade this week and expressed firm will to continue developing his nuclear-armed military. And American Idol winner Lane Hardy has been arrested after being accused of putting a listening device in his ex-girlfriend's college dorm room. Louisiana State University spokesman said Hardy faces a felony charge of interception and disclosure of wire, electronic, or oral communication. Hardy surrendered to the LSU Police Department on Friday and was booked in East Baton Rouge. It is 6:31. Michelle Murray is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
A couple of work zones in Maryland to be aware of on 95 southbound at the exit for Powder Mill Road. That is exit 29, 212. The two left lanes are blocked with road work at this time. That is not really causing delays. On the outer loop at Bradley Boulevard, just after the spur, you will find right lane construction, but again, that is not causing delays at this time. So far, traveling on 270, everything is running at speed from Germantown to the Beltway, and no delays so far on 66 from Centerville to the Beltway. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly to mostly sunny on this Saturday. Temperature is going to warm up a bit, back in the upper 60s today. Some light winds as well. So overall, a great start to the weekend. Don't forget your sunglasses out the door. Later on tonight, partly cloudy, lows back in the 40s to near 50 degrees. We'll have clouds on the increase into your Sunday. A warm frontal boundary will slide in from the south and west, bringing the chance for some showers. I think the highest likelihood for rain will be during the afternoon and evening. High temperatures on your Sunday into the upper 60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
43 degrees, 6:33 on the Saturday morning update. It is a Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jennifer Harper is with us each weekend. She writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. She follows the poll numbers very closely. Good morning.
Well, good morning.
Not a good morning if you're a Democrat reading the latest polls. President's approval rating continues to nosedive. What's the latest?
Well, I bring this up because this comes from the New York Times. How Ooh. About this? And this is what their headline says. It's time to head for the lifeboats. Democratic fatalism intensifies. Now, that's like an uh-oh moment. This is what the Times had to say. Strategists and pollsters are increasingly talking about limiting the party's expected losses in November rather than how to gain new seats. The collective mood of Democratic insiders has darkened appreciatively in recent weeks. Pollsters and prognosticators are forecasting increasingly dire results for the party in November midterm elections. Again, my gosh, that is the New York Times. And according to Robert Gibbs, you might remember him, the former White House press secretary who was in the Obama administration. He said, what you're seeing is people feeling like it's time to head for the lifeboats rather than trying to steer the ship. And you know, Rick, you mentioned those numbers. I'm just going to give you a quick rundown. This is coming from the Associated Press this week. How about that? This is an AP NORC or N-O-R-C poll of 1,085 U.S. adults conducted April 14 through 18. Here is what they say. 66% disapprove of the way Biden is handling the economy. 56% disapprove of the way he's handling foreign policy. 54% disapprove of how he handles the U.S. relationship with Russia. 54% disapprove of his overall job as president. Last but not least, 49% disapprove of the way Mr. Biden has dealt with the coronavirus pandemic. So, as you said, not happy news for Democrats this week.
So what does that mean when the midterms come up and those who run the advertising agencies?
There's already some predictions out there that this is going to be a very, let's just say, a loud election. I'm kind of warning people to buckle up. And I got some information from some of the folks this week at WinRed. This is a Republican online fundraising technology platform. And they report that they have already processed $169.8 million in donations during the first quarter of the year. And that is a 37% increase when compared to the first quarter of 2021. And on average, 43% of the donations were from brand new donors to individual campaigns. Again, this is coming from WinRed. And also on the advertising side, Via Media, now this is a Kentucky-based independent cross-media advertising company, and they've been tracking all this stuff, and they are certainly arranging for it. And they report that they have notched an increase of 42% in political advertising so far when compared to this time in 2018. And this kind of messaging frenzy is spanning all of the political categories, they say, including U.S. House and Senate, gubernatorial and local races. And they're seeing particularly robust activity in North Carolina, Georgia, Pennsylvania, California, and Ohio. And the company has seen a spending vault by 6,561% across certain races, including open seat Senate contests, and they're finding that in Ohio. So kind of buckle up and maybe get some earplugs when the real campaigning starts.
One of the big topics for Republicans and one of the big topics Democrats are dreading, problems at the southern border. And while the administration doesn't seem to be taking much action down there, looks like Republican governors are.
Yes, this is very interesting this week. And let's start, of course, with Texas Governor Greg Abbott. He's always in the centerpiece of a lot of this coverage. And this is what he told Fox News this week. He said, people need to understand the volume of people who are coming across the border in Texas alone. Just during the Biden administration, there were 1.6 million people apprehended. And this is coming from Governor Abbott. He said, think about it. That's larger than the city of Dallas, larger than the city of San Antonio, and that does not count all the people who were not apprehended. And if Title 42 is removed, according to the Biden administration, it would mean 18,000 people a day coming across the border, which would, in turn, annually mean that there would be 6 million people coming across the border. Again, this is coming from Governor Abbott. And he goes back into his math and said, that's two times the size of the city of Houston. And he says there's no way the U.S. can assimilate all of that. But moving right along, Republican governors in 26 states have just formed the American Governors Border Strike Force. How do you like that title? This is described as a partnership across state lines to accomplish what the federal government has failed to do, which is to protect our communities from ruthless transnational criminal organization. And actually, this whole push is being led by Governor Abbott and along with Governor Doug Ducey of Arizona, because they're kind of on the front lines there. And this is what happens when you have a governor who is proactive, gets out there and does something. And, you know, again, I urge people, if you're curious about what really is going on at the border, go to the website of the U.S. Customs and Border Protection folks, because they're very transparent about it. All the events that happen during the week, they do have accounts of them there if you want to see what they're really up against.
Well, the market had a great Friday. They were down 939 points. You do not want to open your next 401k statement. So what does that mean in terms of the response of the news media? Are they finally waking up on the economic problems in the administration?
Yes, like a ding, 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 ding. They're onto it now. Yes, nobody wants to look at their 401 right now. And, you know, that always prompts me to take a look at some of the coverage. And actually, the media was predicting that we would have a full-blown recession for, you know, as far back as October. And that was coming from The Hill, where they said Biden's reckless budget has a potential to crush America's economy and trigger a massive recession coming soon, Biden's full-blown recession. Again, that's coming from The Hill. And Fox said, Fox Business said about the same thing. Last June, they were predicting all that. And let's look in February when Yahoo Finance said America is lurching from pandemic to major recession. And the Heritage Foundation had similar findings. And the voting public, Rick, is absolutely paying attention to this, and the Gallup folks had some interesting numbers about that. They said America's confidence in the economy remains very low, and mentions of economic issues as the most important problem in the U.S. are at their highest point since 2016. Inflation, which registered at the top economic problem last month, continues to be and was previously at this level only in 1984. And so let's, you know, CNN says recession fears are mounting. There's lots of talk about Biden inflation. And, of course, everyone heard the president's comment about all of this on Thursday where he said, I'm not concerned about a recession. That made a lot of news reports. And last but not least, let's look at what CNN columnist, this is CNN columnist Chris Saliza had to say. He says, There are only 194 days between today and the November 2022 election. In political terms, that is a very short window to turn around people's perception of the economy, particularly if inflation and gas prices remain anything close to their current levels. If things stay roughly where they are today, in terms of economic measures like the GDP and CPI and America's perception of the state of the economy, Democrats will experience a cataclysm at the ballot box this fall, again, coming from CNN columnist Chris Saliza. So not good out there right now.
Jennifer Harper, inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. You can follow her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. We're at 6:44. We'll talk to Jim Trusty next, get the latest on some of Donald Trump's legal problems. Well, one is apparently no longer a problem, and we'll find out what that is next. But right now, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Fairfax, watch out for an accident now on eastbound 66 near the Vienna Metro Station. Three right lanes are blocked, so do watch out for delays and use extra caution there. In Maryland on 95 southbound at 212, you will find some construction in the right lane, not causing any delays at this time. And on the outer loop of the Beltway after the 270 spur, you will also find a work zone there, and that is taking up the right lane. But so far, no delays through that work zone, and the Beltway is looking good throughout the rest of Maryland and in towards Virginia. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly to mostly sunny on this Saturday. Temperature is going to warm up a bit, back in the upper 60s today. Some light winds as well. So overall, a great start to the weekend. Don't forget your sunglasses out the door. Later on tonight, partly cloudy, lows back in the 40s to near 50 degrees. We'll have clouds on the increase into your Sunday. A warm frontal boundary will slide in from the south and west, bringing the chance for some showers. I think the highest likelihood for rain will be during the afternoon and evening. High temperatures on your Sunday into the upper 60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
43 degrees at 6:45, the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It's the Saturday morning update. Thank you for being along with us this weekend, first weekend in May. We are joined by Jim Trusty. He is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington, and his resume includes being the former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Headline, New York Times this week, likelihood of Trump indictment in Manhattan fades as grand jury wraps up. Sounds like that witch hunt's in a little trouble.
It does, and I think the worst part of that particular witch hunt is how comfortable the Manhattan DA's office has been with telegraphing where they are on these cases. So what's happened over the last few weeks, really, the grand jury wrapped up its term this week in Manhattan. And apparently, according to a lot of leaks, there hasn't been a whole lot of presentation of witness testimony. Some of the potential key witnesses say they haven't heard much from the prosecutors. And then there's other little things, public or maybe leaked, one being that there's a war room that the DA's office had been renting for some exorbitant price in Manhattan. And they apparently didn't renew the war room. Right? They didn't have enough space in their office, apparently, and they were using that as their little anti-Trump cabal room. But the most recent thing that I think underscores so many of the problems with how that office conducts itself is that there were two senior assistant district attorneys that were on the case. The new district attorney basically said, this doesn't seem to be going anywhere. So they quit the case and quit the office, and that's their right. You can have that kind of professional tantrum if you want to. But what they did on the way out the door is they announced that they felt Donald Trump was guilty of, quote, numerous felonies. And that's really the rub here. I mean, all they've done in Manhattan is they indicted the CFO for the Trump Organization, hoping he would flip on Donald Trump. And we talked about that months ago, Rick. That didn't happen. So now the thing appears to be fizzling out, and what you've been left with are public pronouncements of guilt and acknowledgments of an investigation, which is exactly what you're not supposed to do as an ethical prosecutor. And, you know, we know Donald Trump is used to taking, you know, below the belt punches, maybe, and he throws punches back. But, you know, fill in any relative of yours as the person going through this process, and I think you begin to realize how outrageous it is for a prosecutor's office to announce guilt, to announce they're investigating, to do the things that these guys have done, and then turn around and not really have the evidence at the end of the day. So you never really get the benefit of acquitting yourself or having a jury or a judge say you didn't do anything. You just have the stain. And that seems to be the MO up in Manhattan in recent years for anything connected to Trump. So hopefully, maybe, the case is winding down, but the smear job is going to last for many years.
So the New York Attorney General chased Donald Trump down on a different case, and he was found in contempt of court. Is there a relationship between those two cases?
Well, it's hard to know from the outside, but there is a lot of talk that they're at least covering a lot of the same ground. Letitia James, you know, again, announced that she was not doing a criminal investigation but a civil one, and issued subpoenas for Trump to respond to for documents requests, and his failure to respond is what's led to a trial judge basically saying, you're in contempt and it's going to cost you $10,000 a day. You can expect probably any time this weekend, if it hasn't already happened, that there'll be an appeal of that contempt finding and possibly a stay, meaning that he won't really have to rack up that bill. But there'll be some in-court fighting about the scope of her civil investigation. And I guess the other thing to say is, overlap or not, the criminal case is not officially dead. I mean, it might be, just from reading all these collective tea leaves, but it's not hard for prosecutors to impanel a new grand jury and represent in summary form the information that they gave to the first grand jury. You know, grand jurors typically have periods before they are shut down because it's an inconvenience to the people to have to come in and serve on the grand jury. So it might be for 6 months, 9, 12, 18 months. At the end of the term, if it's not renewed, there are still cases sometimes that get flipped over to the next group. And you basically provide them with transcripts and summary testimony, but you don't have to start from scratch. So the bad news for Donald Trump is, although the criminal case might be hanging from a thread in Manhattan, it's not over, and the civil case brought by Letitia James is starting to exact a little pound of flesh as well when it comes to the possible contempt.
Attorney Michael Sussman back in court this week. Headline in the New York Post, Hillary lawyer Sussman won't try to prove tie between Trump and Russia. Explain why that's significant, Jim, and a little background on it, too.
Sure. Well, first, by way of background, what's happening in the case are called motions in limine, and that's essentially not challenges to the constitutionality of anything where you can dismiss the case or have evidence suppressed. It's getting down to the nuts and bolts of what is this trial going to look like and what evidence is fair game or not. So in mid-April, we had a bunch of filings that were resolved recently by way of these motions in limine for either the admission or the exclusion of types of evidence. That opened up the door, by way of these pleadings, for the Durham team to really start getting much more detailed about what kind of evidence they expect to present in Sussman's trial. And so to make sure that your listeners don't think I'm being hypocritical, the reason we're getting insight into Durham's view about whether people are targets or not is because he's fending off challenges from the defense that Durham is making defense witnesses unavailable by threatening them with charges. So we get a little insight into the investigation. The trial is about 3 weeks away, I think May 16th, if I remember correctly. And the latest was that Sussman's attorneys, again, charged with a false statement, not anything else, but they're saying that prosecutors should have to immunize this Mr. Joffe so he can testify as a defense witness. And Joffe was the academic who engaged in this domain name system analysis, which is basically data mining for connections between computers. This is all a rabbit hole in terms of the Sussman trial. I mean, the Sussman trial is about whether or not he lied to the FBI and apparently to the CIA when he came in and tried to peddle the Russia collusion story at Donald Trump's expense and on behalf of his client, the DNC, and Hillary Rodham Clinton. But what's coming out of this are some really interesting looks into the tech and privacy issues relating to this domain name system analysis. And remember, the key part and why I call this all a rabbit hole, even though it's interesting in the abstract, is that Sussman came to the FBI and had this kind of dressed-up analysis from Joffe and his academic colleagues at Georgia Tech to give him proof to rely upon for links between Trump and Russia. But the very people that handed it to him said, you know, this is really thin stuff. It doesn't show what you think it does. Anybody that knows technology knows these are just the most bare bones speculative links that don't show anything about Trump being tied to Russia. So it's all, again, kind of academic in the sense of whether it matters for his false statement. The falsity of it is pretty clear. The issue for the trial is going to be whether it affected the FBI investigation in a material way. So we're seeing a lot. It really is raising bigger questions about Durham in general than it is about this trial. And what I mean by that, Rick, is the big picture in Durham's probe is, are there going to be prosecutions of people like Hillary Rodham Clinton or close associates for falsely planting this Russia collusion stuff to distract from her own email problems? And are they going to investigate or prosecute folks at the FBI leadership for willfully using false information to hurt the Trump campaign during an election year? And that includes, you know, to obtain FISA warrants to get a look inside the Trump election campaign. So those, to me, are the real big historical issues. And if the evidence supports the indictments, then John Durham has to literally get through the attorney general to pursue it. And that's, to me, the historic moment on the horizon. If Durham has the evidence to go higher up than Michael Sussman, which is a fairly high target, but if he's going higher than Michael Sussman, then we're going to have this big integrity test for Merrick Garland, and that's the one I want to watch when it comes up soon.
Well, have you seen any indicator that it is slowing down in any way or that it might just end with Sussman and Jaffe?
No way to know. And again, that's partly a function of the fact that Durham doesn't leak his business. You know, we don't have all these inside stories about them closing up war rooms or not bringing in witnesses anymore. Now, as they get ready for trial, I would assume they don't have a ton of time to work the grand jury simultaneously, but they might have sufficient staffing where they can kind of split up that way. So nothing in terms of, you know, anyone saying it seems to be shut down, no banging of the gong by Durham that this is the end of the road. But the statute of limitations is going to kick in at some point. So I think we're probably, you know, talking about something where if we don't see indictments or hear about memos going to the attorney general over the next few months, then maybe it will officially be dead. But I suspect it's still alive and kicking for the moment.
Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law, thank you. I know you're on the case and are going to follow that one closely. And I know you have a blog post that you did on the Whitmer kidnapping trial in Michigan, of course, the governor. And what's the easiest way to get to that?
A couple of ways. One is to go to IFRA Law and find it on Twitter through IFRA Law. The other is to go to Trusty Lawyer. And it shouldn't be too hard to find under my name, under my tweets. And by the way, Rick, the whole reason I wrote that is because you got me thinking about it. When we talked about the Michigan conspiracy trial and the FBI's conduct in that, I tried to draw some maybe deeper conclusions over time and put it into writing, and I hope it's a good read for people.
All right. Follow Jim on Twitter at Trusty Lawyer. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
And you too. 6:56 Saturday morning update. Coming up next, Heather Curtis has the 7 o'clock news, and we're back with John Gizzi, White House correspondent for Newsmax, Cheryl Atkinson, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and K.T. McFarland.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.